The Apartment Rebellion will not be televised. Resident experience will be more than a buzzword. Staff experience will finally matter. It's happening right now. It's in the hands of the doers, the innovators, the boundary pushers, who are moving the industry forward, just like the people on this show. This is the Apartment Rebels Podcast, hosted by Flamingo CEO Jude Chi. Welcome, friends of the rebellion, and may the force be with you.
So excited to have Johnny Zayama on Flamingo's Stand-Up Property Manager podcast to talk about his experience in the property management industry. And I was really excited to bring Johnny on because I initially got connected with him less than a year ago. And that's when you were still at the gallery in DC. And then you recently transitioned from there and now based out of Iowa. Two very different cities. So a little bit similar to where I'm at because I grew up in Baltimore, which is pretty close to DC, and then moved to Chicago, which is another like Midwest city. Your transition from DC to Iowa was partly based on the gallery being sold and then you being kind of enveloped into the next thing. So I wanted to use this time to kind of talk a little bit more about your background, the industry, going through a sale, where you are currently, and then how COVID-19 has impacted you all, and then overall lessons that you have learned throughout your 10 years in the industry. Yeah, so I'll kind of turn it over. Kind of tell us about yourself.
Man, thanks, dude. So my name is Johnny Zayameth. I'm from DC. I'm a DC native myself. And I've been working professionally for about 10 years in sales and sales directorship, if you will. And yeah, when we first met, I actually was working at a property in DC called The First, and we were going through a sale on that site. And I then got picked up to serve for a property called The Gallery, and that ended up selling in about 8 months. And it's been a crazy up and down journey working in the field and kind of seeing where the real estate career could take me and kind of what can go awry or whatever have you. I learned a lot in the different transitions that I've been through. But you know, I now serve as a marketing director and I serve 9 properties nationwide in 8 states. And we are still picking up more properties that I visit. And that's kind of what helped transition for me into working so many property types in the city, in DC, and then coming out here to the Midwest where everything is kind of spread apart. And you know, it's kind of just taught me to have a lot of patience, doing so much and working with different folks with different backgrounds and personalities and skill sets, just learning to adapt and be a part of that team in whatever capacity it's needed at that time. That's really my history and the property types that I've served and the different transactions I've been involved in within real estate before being picked up.
For you, like, how did you actually get started in the industry? Like, what motivated you to start and what was your first role?
Thanks for asking. So, you know, I first started out working in banking and I was really good at just kind of talking about housing and home equities and mortgages. I got very comfortable in that universe. And then I was offered a job. Basically, I helped somebody close their home equity line. And she offered me a job as a leasing consultant at her property because she was a property manager.
Oh, wow.
And so a referral on the job type thing. And I ended up working as a leasing consultant. That was my first job in real estate and property management. And it just turned into a whole dynamic range of careers up and downs. I only knew one property at the time. It was like 190 apartments. And I mean, I handled that like a champ, basically. Like it was hard to learn at first, but once I learned how to do it, I just found there to be so much adventure in you know, looking for renters and building events and having people, you know, come down for our taco parties and just coming up with new ideas and having those ideas be appreciated and implemented. Really, what made me the person who I am today? Just knowing that fun ideas can be great, but how you implement it and how you employ them to being and acting on the real world, that's really what made me really love what we do. Just I get to do what I love, and that's it.
So when you started in property management, like, what was that like going from like banking and then going into the property management field? Whereas, did you have was it the same skill sets that you used in banking, or was it like a completely different set of skills that you had to utilize?
So the skills, I didn't quite harness them while I was in banking. We used the same type of sales strategies, things like that, but it wasn't until I hit into real estate that it really became a full circle endeavor in terms of, like, you know, my follow-up skills and planning skills, and all those were always there, but they weren't just being put to the forefront. I was more or less talking about checking accounts, savings accounts, things like that. And I wasn't able to really be myself. And so the same skills that I had was being personable, the customer service side. That's what made me very successful, is that when I started working professionally, the 2008 recession hit. And so I was hired a month later, the market started crashing, and the whole industry went in terms of, you know, the whole structured, you know, handshake, make, say your name three times, have a cup of coffee, you know, all that kind of stuff. It was really interesting because I started out thinking, so this is what professionally working feels like. It's under a lot of pressure. And I kind of learned right from there that, you know, when you are just following the process, things can happen. But then when you build your own process later on down the line, that's when I started to learn to be yourself. Don't just be the robot that was, you know, Johnny in the banks, but, you know, people want to live with you because you are doing this building or doing this event. And that's kind of when my wings started spreading in the industry.
Oh, awesome. Sorry, I had to mute there for a second. Like, okay. Always having like a fire truck like go by.
Oh yeah, I can imagine Chicago.
Oh yeah. And then so for you coming into this and going from like banking right directly into leasing. So some of the biggest like lessons that you have learned the last 10 years or so in the industry.
Thanks for asking. I that was probably one of the first times I ever felt stressed out at work. You know, you can love what you do so much, but you, I guess I wasn't aware that, you know, being a lease consultant really entailed you being a salesperson, somebody that would know how to work with people and how to build. I mean, I didn't really quite get the connections in my first role. I didn't learn that until years down the line.
So it's so funny that you mentioned that. So one of my friends in the industry, he went to Ball State University in, I think that it's Indiana or Iowa, some of the Midwest city. But he started off as a leasing consultant as well. And for him, kind of similar, it took him like a year or maybe two to realize that the leasing consultant role is actually a sales role. It's actually a sales role.
Yeah.
So it's funny that you are the second person to mention that. So I wonder if that's something that's common in the industry for new people that start, not realizing that it is like, it is a sales role.
Yes. Yeah, it's funny because I learned the hard way. I worked for a company that was very structured, very, very diligent. They provided you every tool that you could have used, but if you didn't know how to use tools, that's kind of where it became a challenge. And for me, I think when I started out as a consultant, I thought I was doing a phenomenal job, by the way. But then when I learned how to read budget sheets and learn occupancies and, you know, renewals, things like that, like I had leased for one summer, I think I moved in like 45 people just in 1 month alone. And that was like a really big month. But what does that tell you is that we had 45 vacant apartments in a 192 unit building.
Wow.
So I'm lucky that I had my job even at that before, when I realized, you know, the impact that my actions have on the business is really what kind of made me grow my competitive edge, and seeing that there was a challenge that needed to be, you know, attained or met. And, you know, my role is to bring it to life and make it happen. But, you know,
do you think that's a thing that more property managers or owners that really need to emphasize to make it really clear how your role, whether it's as a leasing consultant, your role as assistant property manager, your role as the marketing person, how that directly connects to the bottom line or the business itself? Because you mentioned that you didn't realize, like, oh yeah, if we have, I brought in 45 people, but that meant we have 45 vacant units, which means a lot of money.
Yes. Yeah. So, I mean, learning the life cycle, I mean, remember, before I spent only about 6 months working that summer and doing those 45. And then I spent the next summer after that, because you remember they were 12-month contracts. Then I remember spending that next summer thinking, man, I had 45 move-ins last year, and now there's like half of them that stayed with us and the other half are moving out. And I don't know if I should take it personal or not, but you know, they're not staying with us anymore. So yeah. Now I have 24 apartments to rent this year. And so, I mean, every summer I kind of realized that there was a cycle. And when I learned the cycle in the whole industry of, you know, you find a renter, you retain them, and if they end up moving out, they end up moving out. But if not, hopefully you've done everything you can to make them want to stay. I didn't really do a lot of resident events at first when I did that first kind of go around, really more or less because I didn't realize the value. I mean, we always had, you know, vendors that came in, offered up money, and I'm just like, why would my residents need a party? What value does that bring? I just thought it was a waste of time because I'm sitting here trying to find people to rent apartments. So I got one part of the job, and the second part of the job wasn't there yet. And so I was like, when I realized the second go around, when we had, I think only like 40% of the actual residents ended up renewing with us. Then I realized, man, maybe I could have been a little more personal and a little more fun. Yeah. So it felt more like, man, if I had been more there with them and I, you know, welcomed them in every single time. And, you know, I was one of those agents. I didn't really know what was going on, but my door was always closed. Mm-hmm. You know, and I would look at you like, why are you knocking on my door? You know, for the most part, like, we don't have any appointments today. And so when I realized that approach in doing business was really inadvertently hurting the business as a whole, we ended up, me and my manager at the time, we ended up learning kind of, oh, so this is how this market here would operate. They would really love different types of events. So I started doing surveys. I started kind of being more in the lobby and kind of like not spending as much time at my desk and it's actually being on the property, doing things. And folks started to respond to that a little bit more. I started noticing the renewal numbers going up, you know, where I made of the 40, we had like 24 people end up moving out. I think that I had, when I kind of stabilized the property at that point, we were maybe doing no more than about 8 to 10 move outs a month.
Yeah.
And that kind of gave me an easy goal to kind of keep on maintaining. But it was, I guess, a stroke of luck that it ended up being like that. I probably also had a really good manager as well that kind of kept me in line with at least get the leases in the door type thing. And so I ended up like fully learning the whole life cycle of a contract. When you come up for renewal, you better have hope that you know, had a good resident party recently, or did something engaging with that person, or did something, we called it at the time, we created a moment that mattered to the resident. And, you know, one of the most profound stories that I had where I ended up helping, I wouldn't say saving someone's life, but I basically played a key role in saving their life.
I think everyone would want to know more about it.
So yeah, it was a very interesting story because I was just doing my daily thing. I was doing my property walk in the morning. Every morning I would just go in, walk the model really quick and kind of make sure that things were kind of cool on the, we call it a tour route at the time. And, you know, I'm coming back from my tour route or my morning walk. And I noticed when I was coming back to the office, I noticed that Maria was very disheveled. She was like, Mr. Johnny, something's not right. And so I'm just like, what's going on? And she's like, there's a man downstairs. And so I'm thinking, wait, there's only one thing that can be a thing. Like, why is she panicking so hard? Somebody's hurt or something. So I ended up running downstairs. I took the stairs instead of taking the elevator because, you know, the stairs are just kind of the easiest thing. I just remember that because I almost tripped. But as soon as I walked out of the little corridor, I saw there was a gentleman. He stayed, I forgot what his name was, unfortunately, and I apologize to him profusely about that, but he stayed in an apartment number, I think it was 112. I remember his apartment number at least, because this is probably one of the first moments that I realized that the role that I had in the process overall was just being there to cater to my residents, to take care of them. Mm-hmm. Because I saw that he was laid out on the ground. He had his hand on his chest, and he was basically having a heart attack in the middle of the floor.
Oh my
in
God.
In the hallway. And there was nobody else who was walking by, but the cleaner, Miss Maria, she was coming out from the cleaner's, you know, closet, and she noticed, and she didn't know how to speak English as well. So she couldn't really communicate what was going on. She couldn't figure it out. So she ran and got me. upstairs. And luckily, I was coming down from the elevator at the exact same time finishing my morning walk. So it was a very lucky chance that this ended up happening. And you know, I saw him. I was like, oh, my goodness, are you OK? What's going on? And I tried to pick him up and he was just like, oh, my God, it hurts. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I don't know what to do. You know, do you have medication? That was the first thing that came to my mind. Like,
yeah,
here's some medication you don't have. And he was like, I have medication, but, you know, I need you to call the ambulance. I was like, you know, I've already called them. I called them on my way down here. They're on their way. What can I do to help you right now? What can I do? And he tossed his keys. He couldn't pick up his hand, but he like tossed his keys on the ground and said, my apartment, there's blue pills in a bag in the kitchen counter. And so I just realized, okay, right. He's literally telling me. So I took those keys. I ran. I don't know if I broke protocol at the time, but I really couldn't care less, because he was telling me what could save his life would be these blue pills that were on the countertop. So I ran and got it. I didn't have water with me, and I didn't see any water in his apartment. So I ended up like taking 75 cents, putting it inside the vending machine, got him some water, gave him his medicine, and he started like getting better within like minutes of taking the medicine. And I was like, dude, can I call your wife? Or, you know, is there somebody I need to call to let them know this is going on? And he was just like, no, just, you know, tell me when the police are here. And, he ended up being taken out on a stretcher. He couldn't stand up. It was very, very hard for him to like, I guess, kind of understand me a little bit, because I was also, I was panicking as well. So I don't know if it was just like a thing, but everybody was panicking. But I'm lucky that I kind of had some sort of composure to serve and kind of take care of him in this case. The next day, this all happened, and I put in an incident report and everything. But the next day, his wife came in. She was crying. She had like a bouquet of flowers that she was bringing to the hospital, apparently. And she just basically said that she wanted to meet the person that saved her husband's life.
Aww.
And I was just like, I think that I just did my part and did what I had to do. But, she was crying because she was, you know, she herself worked in a hospital. She felt that everything was okay at the time. He told her it was okay. And so she went to work. And when she worked in the hospital, they don't have their phones, apparently. Mm-hmm. So no matter how many times he would have called, it wouldn't have gone anywhere just yet. And she found out as soon as he showed up to her hospital that she was at, that he was there. And he basically said that, you know, the leasing person, or the leasing guy was, I don't remember if he knew my name or not, but he was like the leasing guy that worked at the office, called the cops for me and gave me my medicine in time. And he thought that he would have been a goner at that point.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, let's say if I were one of those property managers, I wouldn't consider myself a leasing manager at that time. Let's say if I were one of those managers that just stuck myself in my office all day and didn't learn that lesson of being in my property, managing it to the best of my ability, walking in, making sure that it's okay, would I have been available to help him? I don't think so. Just because, that the office that I had was all the way pushed in the back of the lobby, so that you could really have to like look forward to go to it. They designed that for a specific way like that. But, you know, I think that's one of the things that drove my message home, is that, you know, as a property manager, you're not just managing the property, you're managing the people that are there, you're managing the lifestyles, you're managing somewhat their safety, you know, you're managing a lot of different things. And should one wrong move go and you're not available in a moment of need, you know, he could have been a goner. And that would open my eyes. It's really taking the job for what it was, is that I don't just work in a leasing office. I serve for a rental office. I serve my residents, my customers that I bring in the door. And I think that's what's been able to help me be so successful in selling, is that, you know, when you're selling the dream, if you don't believe in the dream, it's hard to sell it. Whereas for me, I truly felt that I had a role to play in helping you, whether it be saving your life, making your lifestyle easier, offering whatever, you know, it just kind of became a whole thing. And I became a part of bringing that to life for my residents. And I took pride in doing so. And I don't know, it's been that one defining moment really helped me to own every single asset that I've ever worked on after the fact. And it became a thing that turned into a profitable, you know, career for me to do what I do and have fun doing it.
And I think you hit on a really important point when you said earlier that property management is very different than any other job. So for most jobs, if you work in the grocery industry, the retail industry, if you work in an office, your customers, you see them at one point in their life. Also property management, like this is their home. This is where they come to every night. This is where they spend the weekends. This is like their home. So every interaction, everything is just very, just a lot more salient. So just like completely different in customer interaction than you have in any other industry.
Yeah.
But one of the key things that really differentiates property management from pretty much everything else. But man, that's a crazy story though. So I think the most important thing to know here is it the guy renewed his lease?
Yeah. You know, this job, honestly, I mean, I've worked in retail before. I've worked in hospitality for a brief snippet. You know, this job here is, I would say, the only job that isn't just defined by one specific something. It's defined by a person who can hold many hats, whether it be the seller person that's working with the customer, to the person who's caring for the property, to the person who's helping investors really understand their asset and kind of make the best decision for their asset, like recommending capital upgrades. You know, when we say capital upgrades, those are basically like, you know, changing floors, upgrading from carpeting to wood flooring all throughout. Could that be a more advantageous adventure than just doing carpeting all over again? Is it going to make more money? Is it going to help enhance our leasing experience, you know, by having brand new carpeting all throughout the hallway or something? And so when I learned that, you know, the job is more than just serving the customer at hand, because at the end of the day, that is the core of it. But everything else surrounding that is, you know, you can give great customer service, but you have a building that is falling apart, you know, your service or your belief in providing the best service can only go but so far.
Yeah.
And so when I started to take empowerment in knowing my role in ensuring that the quality resident experience is at the top-notch, you know, potential, you know, that's kind of where then jumping into later on down my career when I started working for investors who were in it for the sale, if you will. We would build my first property that was brand new that we leased up. We ended up selling it maybe shortly about 6 months after I stabilized the property. When I say stabilized, it's more like, you know, you go into a property and you'll have like 80 apartments that are available. These are the hard ones to move. We don't know how to rent it. They're the smallest ones, the most irregular size apartments. And so it takes you to go in, own it, call customers, you know, get folks to believe in the product and buy into it, if you will, and end up leasing with us. And once you kind of hit that 100% mark, your job's still not done because you're still having to deal with renewals, making sure that they're staying happy. So I did a lot of parties and all that kind of stuff at that time. And
so I wanted to actually go back on the event. You mentioned something earlier about one of your big lessons was learning the importance of resident events and engagement and talking with your residents. So for you, how were you able to quantify that? Like, how do you, when you look at resident events and engagement as a whole, how do you tie that into ROI? So how do you say we spend $1,000 per month on resident engagement, and here is how it has impacted our renewals or impacted X or Y? Right. So how have you said that in the past?
Yeah, so I can really relay this more to my experience when I was when I did first. The demographic there was just really there for it. But, you know, what I always measure the KPIs, or I call them like basically like the key performance indicators of like how successful was an event, are the byproducts that come from that. Whether they be online reviews on Google, recommendations on Facebook, resident photos where they're all smiling. I was a big fan of doing like boomerangs, things like that, because, you know, no matter what's going on, whatever's happening on your property is potential PR. When I say PR, it's like, if you have a packed house, anybody who might be on social media or might be looking through apartmentlistings.com or whatever, they're looking through that and all they're seeing is an apartment, but they don't know that you've got a booming party every single Thursday because you're doing a wine and sip or something like that. And so you take the initiative, you maybe get a good camera or a camera phone. Most people have camera phones. And if they're having a great time, they're going to have no issues with taking photos.
Yeah.
So it was every photo op you have the opportunity to do. That's how we related to our investors that, you know, residents are happy. This is now a part of our brag book. We can bring it up on social media. We can throw back to it 2 months later on. You know, and so
I'm laughing is because I see this a lot where I go to a property site website or I go to apartments.com, and it's very common where all you see are pictures of empty apartments.
Yes.
It always blows my mind where I'm like, that's not how it works. Like if you look at any other industry, like if you look at food industry, they don't show you like an empty plate.
Yeah.
They don't show you like an empty dining hall. They show people laughing, people eating, people doing all these different things. Right. So I would love to see a property really embrace this where their whole website or their whole apartments.com presence is all pictures from residents. The pictures can be professional, but pictures from actual residents, pictures from like actual events, pictures of actual residents using the fitness center, using the resident lounge to read. I think it just brings a completely different element than what we currently see.
Yeah. I mean, I think that it takes time to, I think, evolve into that realm because, you know, for one, you've got to focus on building the culture first. Mm-hmm. You can't just come in and just throw parties. Nobody will show up if they don't know how awesome the party is. Mm-hmm. So typically what I would do on a property asset is, you know, I would start planning around different things we can have fun with. Things are generally light toned, more or less around music, like 80s parties or just something. Like I did one time, I did a chocolate fondue party.
We did
a fondue machine. We had some fruit on some sticks and it was just a really, really fun thing.
And it's not that hard to do or execute, but it's such like a unique idea because it's not something that a resident is really going to get something else. And that's what I was like, all property managers is do events that are centered around things that the average person is not going to engage or do themselves. If you have like a pizza party, like that's good. It's free food. It's nice. But any resident can order pizza. But no one is going to order a fondue to do that.
Yeah.
So, I've never experienced that. So they are going to come down and
That's a big thing just because, I mean, it is very simple. And I think that the fact that it is so simple is what makes people not think about it. If that makes sense, like it's too simple. It falls right under the radar of actually anybody who's like looking for a fun idea.
Yeah.
For me, I stuck away from doing pizza parties. There's something about it because I know that there was a Planet Fitness used to do like Friday pizza parties, which I was like, I don't know if that makes sense or not. But I mean, when I would go to Planet Fitness, I'd have a slice for my workout. So it'd be a thing. But, you know, anybody can do a pizza party. And I'm thinking like, you know, if even the gym is planning on doing something like this, I can one up a pizza party. Let's have a taco soiree or something. Yeah. And it just became a thing that we came up with a fun idea. I had a lot of partners. The more I kind of got in depth in learning who the collaborators were within my industry, like, you know, my Verizon, Comcast, all the different electrical company folks and vendors that come in, they typically set money aside to be able to serve their customers out there. And, you know, I always had to think of it as, you know, I'm now in the position where I'm not just a resident or I'm not just a customer. Now I'm the customer who's also managing this whole process. So I would then kind of ask and kind of see. I think his name was Maurice. He was this guy from Verizon. He was awesome. He came in every single Thursday and was like, it was almost like it fell on deaf ears because I didn't understand what he was talking about. He was like, you guys have any fun you're planning on doing? And I'm just like, I mean, it's Thursday, dude. What do you expect us to do? But it wasn't until I started thinking with my manager, I had a new manager, her name was Tracy at the time. I was like, Tracy was like, you know, what are we going to do? Like, how do we get residents to, you know, renew? What are we going to do? And so I started then realizing like, I mean, can we give them a giveaway? And she said one thing to me, she goes, where are we going to get the money from, Johnny? Yeah. And I thought, oh crap, you're right. Where are we going to get the money from? So let me think outside the box on this one. So Maurice came in that Thursday. Johnny, you guys planning on doing anything fun? I was like, yeah, I think I want to do a taco party, but I don't know where to get the money from. I didn't know he was going to say, well, here's my card. Let's do it. Wow. He said, here's my card. Let's do it. And it ended up being one of the things that really, the property itself was doing really good, but I didn't start seeing smiles all the time until I started running regular events. And that really then helped when I had folks that were like downstairs waiting on, you know, the taco party downstairs open. They're waiting in the lobby for me to finish up in the office. And it became a very community-based idea that, you know, I would have folks coming in for move-in and they'll be greeted with a whole bunch of residents that are in the living area waiting to go downstairs to the taco party. And it became like, you're going to love living here. And it became free marketing for me because I had a line of folks waiting for the resident party. And then I had a couple tours scheduled just before. So they saw the agreement. They saw how many people were coming, kind of coming in and out.
And they're like, this is where the party's at. I want to move in.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, when I ended up shopping other places, I think it's funny because I didn't realize I was a salesperson until I actually shopped the other places, if you will.
Hilarious.
I did kind of backwards.
All that mean sales.
So, yeah, I mean, I ended up shopping at some other places and I just thought, like, it is so dry in here. Like, I don't know what's going on. There's something in the air. But, you know, nobody was really like jumping up to say hi. And there was barely any smiles. The resident conversations were very like, they were always upset about certain things. I'm just like, the tension in here, you can cut it with a knife. I don't know what's going on, but this is not your normal leasing office. And when I saw that, and then I was just like, you know what? I think we got something going on here. And this was in 2013, 2014. When I was getting my feet wet, I was like, I'm onto something here. Like, I've got to really see where this takes me. And I continued to do the culture even then on. I did a couple more properties. After I kind of did my thing, this ride was called Ravenswood. It was in Virginia. After I did my thing there, I did some bigger properties and it became more skill focused in terms of like, you know, calling and all that kind of stuff still. But then when it always came down to it, the resident events, always what made me jump up and really smile and do everything. You know, was planning it. I was seeing leases come through the door like that because I was the one planning the events. And it became an awesome experience for me because I realized that, you know, through that excitement, it's not necessarily the event that gets it, it's the buildup and it's the offbeat kind of after the fact reverb that comes back to these experiences. When people start recommending us, it becomes an avalanche of just good experiences overall. And it's, you know, something that really was brought to the forefront for me in my career when I did this at First Residences. I mean, I was making sure that I was talking to gyms left and right, trying to get free resident stuff, and they all appreciated it, saved them money at the end of the day. Yeah. It gave them experiences that they can take with their neighbors, go next door to, I think we did at R3, we did at Solid Core, where they would go and have a free complimentary class, and maybe like half of them would sign up, but the other half would be like, I've never tried it before, but I know it's not for me. At least they tried it and they would always kind of remember that we did that for them. And it became a big move that really propelled me into the level of success that I'm at now with my current company that I work for.
Yeah. Oh, awesome. So last question on the resident event side of things. So what was like the most successful resident event?
I've had quite a few. I think they're all successful. if I could go into the past, my most successful resident event, I think was more or less a public / resident event. Mm-hmm. I worked at a building called the Modern at Art Place. Mm-hmm. And as you can imagine, that building was all art everywhere. I mean, we had, it was a building that was designed around the Washington Art School movement that was very, very like drastically different. It wasn't just portraits of people. It was portraits of people's imaginations that were brought to life using just linear paint or just kind of things that you don't expect to see in traditional portrait art. And so when I opened up the Modern Art Place, I and my colleague Quay, we ended up organizing what we call the Riggs Park Art Crawl. And it was a very fun event. It was literally free to do. All we had to do was really find artists who embodied the type of art that we were trying to portray for the general public. And it literally became a neighborhood-wide movement. We had seven different businesses. It was a coffee shop, a liquor store. There was a brewery. Like, and we're talking fun, exciting stuff. Even like a dog store, like a pet store was even there too. But all these businesses wanted to kind of build up the brand culture of the neighborhood. So this was Riggs Park, which was being rebranded at the time. And the whole movement or the catalyst that brought it to life was really the art. And so we did this art crawl, and it brought in folks from different neighborhoods within DC. They came in, they saw the art, and our building was phenomenal. But we ended up, I mean, that event had me working like 12, 13 hours, just straight, just making sure that everything went smoothly. Like, we had free giveaway stuff, and it just overall, they created a really good rapport with the general public and local businesses. And that's really kind of where the excitement kind of came up, because we got the abilities to, you know, give, you know, gift cards away from these businesses that want to cooperate or wanted to be a part of it. That was what I would say is one of my most successful ones, because I mean, I've been reaping the benefits of planning something that elaborate for the rest of my career afterwards. And now anything else that I'm planning just seems to be like, oh, there's only one. Okay, all right, that's easy enough. But I'm sitting here, when I was doing that, I'm just a beginner at the time, taking on seven different, you know, things that are happening all at once. So it just became easier, and it was a huge success because, I mean, we ended up selling art pieces. We got we got rentals out of it as well. We got mentioned in many articles online about it. And it just became a great experience to be able to be a part and to be the leader in bringing that to life. That was one of my favorite PR type of things that I put together.
And now, what has been like your favorite like event hack?
Event hack?
Yep. So I know you mentioned like take advantage of like vendors, the free stuff I get. What would be like your top event hack that you've come across?
You know, I mean, I don't want to say art again, but cultivating art is kind of hard in different areas where it's not as creative, things like that. I've always been one to notice art when I first see it, analyze it, understand it, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, one of my life hacks has always been being the creative person. So, I mean, art in whatever form, whether it be musical art or, you know, poetry art, you know, comedy art, whatever it is, I always try to find, I guess the hack for me would just be finding something creative that I can make art out of. It's an abstract.
Referring towards like an event hack, like something that has helped you like making the event process, like resident event process a lot easier or faster, or something else that's been like, oh, every person should utilize this.
Oh, you know, quite frankly, actually, it has been Flamingo before. I've done some things that I've tried to propose, did proposals and all that kind of stuff in the past. And having somebody that, or having a program that can give ideas without having to put so much brain work into it. Because let's say if I knew about Flamingo even before I did the art crawl, it would have been a little bit easier, I feel like, you know, building content. Whereas, you know, now I don't
hear that. Flamingo is doing its job.
Absolutely. I mean, it kind of, when you and I first met, I was thinking like, you know, this guy's got some really good ideas. Like, I'm really digging this app that he has and everything. And when you presented it to me, I was like, this is exactly kind of what I wanted to do. When I'm sitting here emailing all these residents with like, what kind of event would you like to see? And like, you know, 50 times in a row, this can be sent in one e-blast or something. So like, you know, having a tool that'll help you mass communicate or centralize experiences, that's, I think, would be the biggest hack that would be very useful in the industry, is by having that available to you. But I mean, you know, it's easier said than done in some cases, and there are a lot of politics in play as well. But, you know, when it comes to, I mean, having that hack available, having folks that can bring the content, not having to find, you know, an artist or a painter or something to that effect, having just not worked so hard to building up an art crawl, you know. And if I had access to an artist that could potentially bring up this art, I didn't have to look for 3 months for this artist. and pay them a certain amount of dollars to whatever, and not actually sure what would come to the table. I mean, I took a risk in doing the dark crawl with the artist that I did. And it turned out to be very profitable for me because, you know, we ended up selling, getting a piece of it for the property. But for the most part, it just became, it can get very tedious, put it that way. When you're planning these events out, it can get very tedious because you're balancing a lot of things. I mean, you're balancing your main goal, which is your renters and occupancy. But then also on the other side of it, the retention side, you can't just put a platter of crackers out and expect people to think, wow, you got to be different. You've got to bring something to the table that hasn't been there before. Yeah. And that, but I feel like having a hack like Flamingo would do for me in that way.
Well, I'm happy to hear that Flamingo is an event hack for property managers.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the big reasons why I wanted to have you on the podcast was just based on your experience going through a sale and kind of managing that process. So I think it would be really beneficial to hear from you, like, what is it like to go through a property sale? What are some lessons learned? What are some things that anyone that is going to go through that, like, what should they know? What does that process itself actually look like?
I mean, I would say going through as many sales that I've been in, there's a lot of uncertainty that you're going to have to get around. You know, most folks, I don't know, when I first heard about the property, you know, going through a sale, I didn't know anything at all about the whole process. Mm-hmm. I underestimated how much it would affect me on the inside in terms of, I didn't realize it would affect my motivation, my morale, all that kind of stuff in terms of like, well, am I going to have a job the next week or something? You know, despite dealing with those things, there's a certain level of uncertainty that you have to understand. When you're going through a property sale, it's fair game. And typically speaking, you have to understand that most management companies are going to be able to retain the same management contract or the same employees, because what it is what makes the employee valuable is the fact that they know the asset, they know the building, they know the customers, they want all that. All it is a real estate transaction with very, very high up parties that are involved in a very, very high level transaction. Whereas at the little level here, I mean, it can be anybody who's buying or selling, but the ones who are here on the day to day, those are the things that are important in a whole transaction. In my first time going through a sale, I didn't realize this. Mm. Okay. So I had a little bit of resentment because I thought, man, so I just leased this place up and now you're already trying to sell it. Are you kidding me? Even with I didn't learn the industry as well as I did, but you know, you got to sell when you're on top. You see what I mean? Yeah. So if you're not, then you're going to dwindle down or whatever it is. But you know, most investors are going to look for that payout at the end of the tunnel. And so they look for talent to bring it up, make it as profitable as possible, bring the occupancy level to where it needs to be. And then later on down the line, if they decide to sell, they might just sell. If not, and it's still a profitable asset that's generating revenue. And that's what you have to do. It comes down to, it's just business. It's not ever personal.
And at first, it's really, really critical for anyone going through a sale to know. So I just want to reemphasize that. Yeah. If your property is going through a sale, so any smart investor, any smart buyer, they want to keep the most important asset, which is the people there.
Yes.
The property management team, the site team, they know the residents, they know the market, they know the building. Yeah. So for any smart investor, they don't want to get rid of that.
Absolutely.
Because if they do, they're bringing someone that knows nothing about the property, knows nothing about the residents.
And then you have to deal with the learning curve, and then you have to deal with the, I didn't know that was an issue until I started here last week.
Yeah. In a way, it almost gives the site team some leverage. Any investor probably hate me saying this, but it gives the site team some leverage. So if you are looking to get that next promotion, if you're looking to get that 10, 5, whatever percent raise, now is probably the time to bring those things up. So you have the leverage at that point.
Very funny that you mentioned that, because I mean, my second promotion was through a property sale. What it was is that the owners noticed the level of professionalism that I brought to the table. You know, I didn't treat it as a, I just work here type thing. This was a, I manage this property. This is how we handle it here. we're open to whatever, we're open to whatever feedback you might have. And being collaborative with the new investors and the old investors, because you got to realize that you are kind of somewhat a broker in between. You've got to build a relationship between the old investor to the new one. You got to make sure they have a good light with each other. Because if their transaction fails out, who knows what may happen after the fact. So I realized that my goal at that time was really to connect the dots, to make sure that all ends met, to be prepared for any property due diligence, walkthroughs, things like that. You know, I literally had to walk, I think, all 325 apartments, split by three. I walked like 100 apartments in a day doing due diligence. And the whole time, I smiled, I laughed, put up jokes, but it was the most nerve-wracking thing having to deal with, because they're literally monitoring the asset and seeing, you know, like, where can they make improvements on this and that. And, you know, I did it all in stride, but I was worn out by the end of that day. It was like constant walking for a whole 9-10 hours, you know, and you're talking to folks that you just met 20 minutes ago, and now they're scrutinizing your product in terms of, you know, what's going on with the floor here, or is this not leveled as well, or, you know, what's this and that, and you've got to own it. Well, you know what, this is just the way that the building was settled in with the foundation. These are one of the areas of improvement that we could put in. And I always presented it as if it were an opportunity to make money, an opportunity to save money, or an opportunity to put in a capital investment. Those are the kind of three things that I always focus my conversations on when I talk to these guys, because, you know, they're thinking about numbers and logistics. And, you know, they're not thinking about necessarily the customer at hand, but that's important as well. But to an investor, it's the asset that makes or breaks the deal. And so them learning about it, the nitty-gritty, they don't always hate the negative or hate the flaws in the building. That's not always the case at all. That's an opportunity for them to put capital into renovating or into building up or fixing up something so that there can be a better value proposition later on down the line.
Yeah.
You know, when you
investors, when they do make a purchase, they have some capital set aside for improvements, and they are looking to take that to the next stage. So they come knowing that this is something that I want to improve on and then eventually sell it or maybe keep it in-house. So they come in with that mentality, like, yep, I'm going to do it, but I have the cash to actually do it.
And I'll tell you this, most investors are used to not getting that information up front. Most property management teams are doing a job, but they're not absolutely necessarily experts on their product, if you will, because maybe they started there a year ago or something like that. They haven't gotten that whole part of, you know, this building is known to have a set of a foundation issue. You know, they don't know that. So that's why they take these due diligences very, very, very deep, because they've already at that point put down a deposit. The money went hard. So it's either they've lost the money or they make a decision. What are they going to do? And so if you can be that catalyst for them to learn about the product, learn about the areas of improvement, so they can calculate their budgets accordingly, you've got a good light. That's what it is. And I got picked up from a different company shortly after the sale finalized on my first product. Then I started working at this other property that was a completely different situation. I went from a brand new building that just stabilized after initial lease up, and that was it. Very clean cut sale, because the property was great in terms of like the construction and everything. Just minor things. The management company, the ownership group that wanted to buy that one really bought it to have capital within their own name rather than having contract management things. And so they wanted an asset that belonged to them, and that was their opportunity to do it. Whereas when I transitioned and I moved into a different property asset, this one was a little bit more challenging. It was three properties that reconsolidated into one. And that one was the gallery that we mentioned a bit earlier. That one had three different levels of finishes and three different levels of apartments. It was probably the craziest time I had leasing. Because I mean, I'm literally selling three properties all at once. And I had a leasing team that was doing the same thing. And, you know, it was probably the largest staff that I've had to manage and take through this transaction. And I was really the only one that really understood you know, the value of working with these new investors instead of, what are they going to do? Are they going to fire us all at the end of the day? No, that didn't happen, obviously. What it was that, you know, they were coming in, they wanted to bring in capital to raise the investments to the next level, get it to another level in terms of the quality of the apartments themselves. And so, you know, I did everything I could to paint the picture. I was very raw and real about it. I spoke to them as an investor myself. Mm-hmm. And that's ultimately what, you know, grew me into doing what I'm doing now as a leasing and marketing director in this capacity, working on 9 properties at once. Mm-hmm. So I can really go in and assess everything from the sales strategy to the building quality and presentation, everything marketing wise, sales wise, that's all within my realm of what I can look at and what I'm able to help implement. And while I have a team that works with me in doing those things now, you know, you have to kind of grow into that aptitude into being able to handle more at once. And I showed that with my time working at the gallery, rebranding 3 properties, 3 different names into one called the gallery. And you have to understand it as one gallery. And that was all that changed. But it was complex for us. And it was hard to train a team. It's not impossible, but it was very hard to get, you know, 5 different minds to think about one product the same way because they were just so confused. No matter what we threw at them, they were just like, I don't know, is this Sienna Gardens or is this Sienna Creeks? I can't tell the difference. But, you know, that's, I had to break it down and, you know, give a process and they employed it. And that's what made that building very successful. And it sold, I think, in 10 months of me coming in and helping to stabilize the operation, building up the online rapport, building up the resident culture, things like that.
That's awesome. And then, so right now you are in Iowa. So after the gallery moved over to Iowa, so what is it like? What are some of the big differences between the big differences between D.C. and Iowa? I know you mentioned that everything is more dispersed in Iowa. So what are some of the differences between D.C. and then Iowa?
In D.C., I'll tell you this. In D.C., there's plenty of opportunities here as well. I'll say that the demographic and market environment is what's a little bit different. There's a different type of pace in Iowa that it gives you a lot of room to breathe and it gives you a lot of room to kind of explore your ideas and all that such. Whereas when I was in the city in DC, it was, you could have a good idea, but if you take too long to implement that idea, it's going to be yesterday's idea. You have to be quick to find an opportunity and you need to have been able to implement it as it came up, or else, you know, it'll just become yesterday. And, you know, here I can sit and plan for 2-3 weeks ahead of time and it'll just go smooth sailing. It's, you know, it's great. You kind of get that. There's no time pressure. And I'm not talking people time pressure. We're talking market changes time pressure. You know, when I was doing this for the first residences, I think I had 21 competitors that were being released. And I was counting the months. I was like 15 months and there were like 5 apartments that just got released. And then we had like 7 more that were on the line to come release in the next 12 months and so on and so forth. And that's not even including the properties that are already online that are also having specials, that are also having resident issues or whatever have you. And so, you know, my whole thing was, okay, so how do I beat them to the punch? What do I do that they're not doing? That's where like Facebook and social media really came to the table, to the forefront. So I was trying to do these virtual tours and virtual leasing, you know, things before it became a pandemic thing. It's the weirdest thing. I would go in and then say, you know, I've got 12 apartments just like this one. Let me do it all right now. Take these pictures right here. And as soon as I find someone who might be interested, I'm going to send them a Dropbox link and boom. And it was there. And now we've kind of transitioned and turned it into more of a, you know, we'll do videos now to tour apartments and all that stuff. But those are things that you kind of have to, me sitting back, noticing the market, I saw everybody kind of going through that whole, can I get comfortable with the camera? Or, you know, you kind of saw that development grow in a lot of properties. And you saw as soon as they kind of like hit the ground running and they kind of got acclimated to it,
we can just do this all.
Yeah, exactly. But I saw there was a little hesitation in the very beginning when the pandemic first started. It was just like, man, how do they do it? Like, it was just like they've got a lot of guts in doing it. It takes a lot of courage to either get behind or get in front of the camera because you're producing, you know, you're producing a product which is now it's an idea that is now a digital asset that you can use. Hope I even answered the question.
you definitely did. So kind of like the last question that I have for you is, or last two, in terms of like the multifamily industry, what do you think needs to change the industry? And I keep that broad by design.
Right. You mean in relative to the pandemic or the situation we're in right now?
That's why I keep it broad.
I've been doing this well before the pandemic happened, but I'm always an avid promoter that we personalize every experience to the customer. And when I say personalize, I'm not just using it because it's a big word that most people know or anything. When I say personalize, I really mean getting to know who you're working with, understanding where they're coming from, being able to present your case of your product in a way that caters to their needs without being pushy. And I'm not going to kid you, there have been a lot of cases where I've gone and shopped and, you know, it was very fun, very friendly, but it wasn't personal. And so I couldn't tell the person from another person that I had just toured the day before or something like that. And a big approach that I know that is somewhat lacking across the board in all the property management is that personality factor is, you know, you don't have to have a superb personality that is just so stand out, but you really want to make sure that you let your customer know that you're hearing them, you're listening, that you understand what their needs are. And a lot of people have trouble really getting that message across. You may mean very well, for sure, but if your customer doesn't truly feel that, I don't think that the job's being done correctly in a way. You know, how we've done things differently since, you know, dealing with this pandemic, aside from continuing to push our virtual tour experiences and all that such, we've been personalizing every message from social media on our Facebook to promoting that folks can message us 24/7 to get information. We have somebody monitoring the Facebook page because, you know, most folks are all over social media right now because they're not able to, whatever have you. And an area that we saw was an opportunity was that we can be just as personal with our tenants and give them what other places are making it hard to do. Like, I can't even tell you, I've done probably 25 shops or internet shops in the last like 8 weeks. And it was just awestruck to me that, you know, I would put in an inquiry on the website and I wouldn't get a call back. I wouldn't get a call back. I wouldn't get an email back. And when I did, it was a template that was literally a computer generated template. And so, you know, I had no qualms with, okay, let me just close the computer and go on to the next or whatever have you. It wasn't personal at all. And how I promote with my team here that what we do is, you know, we really break it down, have a conversation discussion with the customer. Call them as soon as we hear from them. Just as soon as it happens, call them. It's immediately. And
the lead goes from being this warm to being cold that quickly.
Yeah. And you know, when you present that first impression, because remember, first impressions are very important, but when you control that first impression and you make sure that it's informative, friendly, personalized, like, I'm not going to tell you about our studios, ones, twos, threes, fours, and fives. I'm going to tell you about what you asked for. So you called in about a three bedroom, you know, and kind of playing that role of the person who's guiding your customer through the sale is what makes it personal to them because you're giving them the time and attention. And I think that's what's lacking today is time and attention that's not being given to the customer, but more or less on other things that are stressors within the industry, such as, you know, budget deadlines or, you know, landscaping deadlines, reporting deadlines. And at the end of the day, we know that the customer is going to be what runs our business.
Yeah.
And we personalize and make them feel welcome and give them the opportunity to express what they'd like.
Yeah.
I think that's going to create the better, more engaging, personalized experience.
I think you hit on a really interesting point, which that's another conversation that can take on a whole life of its own, is the amount of time that's spent on different things. Like, where else in other industries, they have adopted technologies that just make things that simple.
Yeah.
So, this is more of a plug for Flamingo Everywhere, but not really a plug. Like, we live with properties that do things extremely manually. They do, for example, they do events and they take RSVPs via email or via call. They have to print out flyers to post in the field. It takes up more time. And we come in and say, use this app. It literally automates everything.
Yeah.
It automates all of that. You don't have to do anything else.
Yeah.
Part of the stress in the industry is that property managers just have so much they have to do. And it's impossible to do all those things and still deliver a quality resident experience when, like you said, you have to worry about X, Y, or Z all at the same time. Yeah. So I think for me, what I see for the industry is just adopting more technology and just saving yourself from everything that needs to happen.
Yeah. Being different, I think, is a big thing that Flamingo brought to the table when I was starting to kind of learn a bit more about, you know, what Flamingo's mission was and everything. You know, in understanding that part is making the property manager's life easier has really helped out. You know, bringing fitness to the table, bringing, you know, just different ways of engaging rather than just a telephone and an email. Those are great to bring them in the door, but you can build that experience and have an easy way of putting that together and have it be cohesive, by the way. I know that there were some properties that I've seen in operations that they're still using just normal Word templates with the black and white little font and everything like that. And it's just all in capitals on the top to say it's a resident event. You know, that's great that the effort's there. But what I loved about working with Flamingo is that, you know, the flyers are created. They're there. You just have to pick and choose which one works best, what's going to fit for the theme that you want, and you put it through, and there you go. I mean, it's a cohesive event that didn't look like it was just thrown together, but it was actually planned out. And it's that presentation piece that personalizes that experience for the customers that, you know, it's not just a random person at the building. Like, they actually set aside time to find somebody, whereas, you know, Flamingo just made it easier to find that connection. You know, spa nights and all that kind of stuff, those really became like a big, those experiences are really what's going to personalize the rentership experience.
Excellent. So last question, what's next for you?
So, I mean, I'm very happy with where I'm at now, but, you know, I'm a firm believer, like, my journey is never done. I see myself next as some sort of an asset manager, dealing with more properties, not just nationwide, but maybe internationally, being more of an investor myself rather than working for investors, I think. I mean, you know, it's fair game right now at this point. I'm in a very happy place. I've worked very hard to get where I'm at, and I've, you know, fallen into the arms of a great company that really believes in me. And is allowing me to empower my creativity, my leasing juice, and just kind of spreading that all over to the different properties that we have.
Yeah.
And it's a good challenge. I'm not going to, there's not a day that I have just a minute to spare. I'm literally looking at one property 1 second, and then a thought comes to another property and going to the next. So, I mean, until I really kind of master that part, I'm not exactly sure that I'm ready for the next step yet, but upon the horizon, I am seeing myself grow more into being more of an asset manager or some sort of a director for a residential, you know, department of a real estate company. And hopefully it's with the company that I'm in now, because we've got a lot of room to grow. We've got a lot of different assets that we can make happen. And, you know, we've got a lot of investors that can also show profitability too. So, you know, I'm very happy with it. And I mean, It's kind of hard to say because I've dealt with like wanting to like keep promoted and so many different jobs that I've been in and everything. But this is the one that's like, you know what? Who cares about the promotion right now? I've got a challenge right here and I'm going to match the hell.
Anyways, we'd love to have you on at some point to talk about what it's like to be an asset manager. This was awesome. I think you have amazing experience in the industry and then all the perspective you've given from really understanding that a leasing consultant is a salesperson to the value of events, to the value of really personalizing the resident experience across the board. And then everything that goes into the sales process for a new property. So really happy to have you on and definitely looking forward to seeing how you grow in every other way.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's been always a pleasure to work with you. And, you know, thank you for bringing me on board and being a part of this. I'm excited to see the finished product and take it from there.
All right. Awesome.